Revived Thoughts is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Troy and Joel, and you are listening to Revive Thoughts.
Troy, this is another Revived Conversation. That's right, Conversations. This is where we talk about just things in life that maybe we have thoughts or insights on based on what we see in church history and what others have done before us. And Troy, I'm kind of following your lead on this one, the flow. You said, Joel, I want to talk about money. And I said, all right, I'll go with the flow. Let's ask your questions, Troy, and we can see how. I'm assuming you want to talk about how our current attitude towards money maybe is contrasted with historical church leaders' attitude towards money. Is that the direction you're thinking?
So yeah, I kind of have a very specific, like, because if you're going, hey, if you're a longtime listener, you might say, wait a sec, guys, you ran out of ideas. You have done an episode on money before. This is not necessarily a how to spend your money kind of an episode. What I'm thinking about, so recently there were conversations I've noticed, just recently in general in Christian conversations, I have noticed a kind of swing in this direction. And maybe you're going to listen to this and go, I don't sense this. This is not in my atmosphere. Maybe not in my bubble, but I have noticed a lot of people who are beginning to, they'll say things like, I'm working hard to leave my children and my children's children a legacy of wealth. I want to create generational wealth for my family. That's a phrase I hear a lot of, just these different kind of ideas of like, our purpose here with money is to leave a lot of money for our loved ones, et cetera, and so on. And so this is, and also to build a very comfortable retirement, all these kinds of things. And a lot of people are putting, kind of God's stamp of approval on it. Like I've noticed, like, this is like God, if you do, almost as if like, if this is not something you are doing with your money, then you're being an irresponsible steward. This is not, you know, what it's called, which to a degree sounds really good. And I don't necessarily want to like attack the entire idea, but I think there's definitely a place for some of this. But I've also seen this conversation kind of almost drift in the direction of being almost an attack on missions, where like, you shouldn't spend your money on overseas missions. You should be building it into your local community and your local family. I've seen people kind of basically attack the idea of like selling some of your stuff to give to the poor, where I've heard people kind of attack that idea of like, oh, come on, that and then it sounds crazy. Maybe you're hearing this and going, I've never heard anybody say that, but I assure you, there is a conversation happening within Christianity where the idea is basically, it just sounds so foreign to me. It sounds foreign to church history, and it sounds foreign to the scriptures that I read, but it's kind of building steam. And so I just wanted to look at this kind of idea of the retirement, like the, not the, how do I spend my money today, but the retirement plan, the, we're going to build ourselves a big comfortable life at the end and then pass on a big savings. Is that something we're seeing in church history? Is that something we're seeing in the Bible? Or is that something that's kind of a new phenomenon that maybe we should not, again, in somebody's listening who's retired and go, oh, great. So Revived Thoughts guys are saying I'm insane. No, that's not. It's not it. I just want to look at it from this kind of church history and Bible perspective and see, is this something that is normal or not?
It's interesting. I feel like there's a few different aspects to this conversation. There is the, is it responsible to save for retirement conversation? There is, I feel like a cultural element to it, depending on your upbringing and your family dynamic, on what your attitude and thoughts towards this are, because there's upbringings where this just was like saving retirement was not a thing that your family did or encouraged or taught, and then other families where that was something that was encouraged and taught. And I do feel like that would play into maybe a person's attitude towards this. And then we're juxtaposing all of these thought processes with what we see in the past, which I feel like could also further be a variable in that, just the prominence of wealth that we have compared to days of old, what to do with money that we do have access to. But I suppose to start all of that off with, you are totally right in that more time, the vast majority of the time, especially, you know, on Revive Thoughts, we spend a lot of time looking at the lives of church leaders for the past 2,000 years, and almost exclusively, not all the time, but the vast majority of the time, they minister up until the point that they die, and they die with no more money than they probably would have had 30 years prior to that. Like, that's what they've given their life to, and they work up towards the end, and it's not, they're not retiring. And I guess another part of that conversation must be then, like, what does retirement look like? But the idea of stockpiling, well, even stockpiling sounds like we would have pushed back on that type of terminology. The idea of investing in a retirement doesn't seem to be something that is a part of life structures up until recent Americans as a whole.
And with that said, look, some people will hear this and go, well, yeah, life was different in the 1800s and 1600s, guys. You're not rocket scientists for figuring that out. You know, I've seen people kind of just, you'll brush off all of this discussion with, you know, they all died in their 40s back then. Every day was a blessing. We can't compare ourselves to back then. You know, I recently was in a discussion with people who were, you know, saying you should wait. A gentleman was saying something to the effect of, like, you know, nobody younger than the age of 35 should ever be a pastor. And I was like, well, wait a sec, Spurgeon, Moody, like almost like a half of our show would be disqualified, because and certainly every single, with only a, I can think of like a handful of exceptions, did they start ministry after 35. And the person just was like, well, yeah, but that was different. It was the 1800s. Nowadays, nobody could do it. I was like, okay, that, you know. And so if you're going to do that, like, look, we can't have much of a conversation. The idea is like, well, it's all different. But I always think we make the past more different than it is. And look, it is different. But also, it's not like they don't understand the idea of savings, right? Like, it's not like they don't understand the idea of investing. They might not put it in the stock market, but, you know, people of the past could invest in things and get a profit. That, you know, there's a reason why there's the parable of the 10 talents, right? And the guy got in trouble was the one who, you know, buried his talent, and it's investing. There was an understanding that you could put money somewhere and expect more money back, right? So this is not such a foreign concept to the people of the past that they can't talk to each other, right? So with that said, then when we look at the past, you're right, Joel, when we say, like, these people just don't, for starters, there's no concept of retirement. You work till you die, and if you're a preacher, you especially are preaching till the day you pass on. There are a few people who kind of in their later years, especially as we get towards the 1700s and 1800s, they might take the last few years down. They're just too sick. Their voice is gone. They're not maybe as mentally with it, so they help kind of pass it on to the next generation. A really famous example of that is G. Campbell Morgan in the 1940s. As he was kind of older, he just wasn't able to keep up anymore. He helped pass his ministry on to Martin Lloyd-Jones. So we do see that happening, but he never really fully 100% bowed out of ministry. He just took a step back so that the next guy could kind of up and coming could take it from him and go from there. So that's its own conversation. Look, I do want to say too, if you're hearing that and you're going, oh, great, so I work at a banking job and you're saying I never get to stop, that's super, no, it is a different world. One aspect that was really different that we do not have today, and maybe we need to work as Christians to apply this more, is when you get to a certain age back then, it was expected that your family, your home, the people around you would kind of pick up your slack. If you aren't able to go into work and do the farming or show up at the bank, because they had banks back then too, and if you're not able to do all that stuff like you used to, you kind of go home and your people back home will help care for you. So nowadays retirement really is between you and the boss and you're done, right? And maybe that's something we need to work on, is getting back to a place where people can kind of go back home, quote unquote, to their families and be there instead of having to be out, you know, doing it till they're 80 years old. So it is a little bit different between ministry and that. But when we're talking about the savings, we're talking about that investments. That is the area where I go, yeah, I do think we're out of step with most of history with this kind of constant aiming for building the giant retirement nest egg.
Mm-hmm. So where's that line for you? Because I feel like...
Exactly $43.67 a month. Any more than that, sin, obviously.
No, seriously. Like, because there's, I mean, in a ecosystem, because we live in a life of luxury, especially compared to days of old, right? Transportation, communication, the standards for comfort and living are higher than they've ever been, and the means for achieving comfort has higher than they've ever been before. So we have, generally speaking, I understand there's people that are very poor out there. Globally speaking, the world is wealthier than it's ever been. Economically speaking, the world is wealthier than it's ever been. At what point do you say, or at what point is it wrong for you to maybe want to provide an easier life for your children or for, I know a lot of people that in the church that invest with the intent of being able to support the church and ministry opportunities more effectively. I know that's probably
I'm not against investing.
About.
No, I'm not against investing, Joel. And when my $20 and that crypto coin finally take off, you guys will all see that you were foolish to laugh at
just
me.
Just lost all credibility with all the listeners.
You guys, right now, quick revived meme coin at
we're starting our own.
We're gonna get there. No, but what I'm saying is I don't think it's a sin. Look, it's very clear. We're not. Don't hear these words. Like, it's a sin to invest. It's a sin to want to retire. Or it's even a sin to enjoy nice things sometimes. Of course not. Right? Of course not. Jesus has wine at the fest at the wedding. Like, okay, it was free wine. He made it. But you know what I mean? Like, clearly he ate at Lazarus's house. Lazarus is a rich man. You know, in the Bible, him and his sisters are not poor at all. And you don't see Jesus, you know, slamming him for that. From what I can tell, it seems like everything's fine with that. Jesus recognizes there are poor and there are rich. And he highly encourages the rich to give to the poor, care for the poor, love the poor. But Jesus also acknowledges the poor you always have with you, right? We have many scriptures. James is, weep and howl, you rich, for the miseries that are coming upon you, but because they were holding back from the poor or their workers. If you're not doing that, if you're using your money to care for other people well, if you are taking your investments and giving it to, you know, these ministries, you are helping out in the overall community, and you care about the gospel going to the lost, I'm certainly not going to condemn you. I think you're absolutely doing what you're supposed to do. So this is not a question of whether or not you can be rich. But what's that line? Where is the moment where you've gone from building your money to do something that will last, that will get you the treasures in heaven, right? Jesus is always saying, you put your money in treasures that will last on earth. None of you are focused on treasures that will last in heaven. You know, so I think that's the question. If you're looking at your retirement and savings and you're thinking purely in terms of my retirement and savings on earth, you are looking at your retirement savings, I think, from a sinful perspective, because you also have a retirement, you know, quote, we're going to use that language. You have one in heaven too. You have a treasure in heaven. You need to be invested. Jesus is very clear. Don't invest just on earth where the moth, you know, destroys the clothes and the rust wipes out the gold. You've got to be investing also into heaven as well. Don't, the parable of the guy building storage barns, I'm going to build, that's, if you want a parable that goes against the retirement mindset, that's kind of the one, right? There's the guy who has the storage. He's got so much food, got so much supplies. He needs to go build a bigger barn. But when he fills that barn up, he'll say, okay, heart, life, I can enjoy the good life now. I'm going to be able to drink and party. I just need to finish this other barn that can hold all my stuff in it. And then Jesus says, you fool, you didn't realize your soul would be asked of you that very night. And I'm not saying retirement is sinful, but I'm saying that is the parable that should shake you up a little bit. If you think your money is just to build a legacy wealth for yourself and your family to enjoy, and you're just, that's your only goal, is to make that barn big enough so that everyone is happy, that I feel like that parable is supposed to be telling you that's not what your money is for.
So what it sounds like to me is you're saying that this is like a personal choice that each individual makes with their specific situation before God, and their conscience. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, isn't that true for, yeah, I mean, I think everything in terms of money. C.S. Lewis has the famous quote, I don't know how much percentage you should give, but I know it should hurt. And I think that that's a pretty good quote on giving, right? Like, if I'm not going to say 12% is the amount you must retire. You know, and I don't think that number absolutely does not exist in scripture that tells you how much that should be. But okay, but if we want to look at church history, you know, church history podcast, Ambrose sold all he had and gave it to the poor and then went into ministry. Basil sold all he had and gave it to the poor, and he had a lot of land when he sold it all. Augustine also gave away his stuff, sold it to the poor. Saint Nicholas, famous for selling all his stuff and giving it to the poor, and that's where we get Saint Nicholas of Christmas from. We could, how many of these guys from the ancient church? I'm teaching in class with my students, and it's almost like it's almost a joke. And you're like, and this guy, and by the way, of course, he sold all he had and gave it to the poor. Went on to do, you know, X, Y. It's almost, it's a disclaimer. You expect it. In the ancient church, in the old church, in the church under the Roman Empire, and even as the Roman Empire was going away, it was assumed that if you were going to go into ministry, if you were going to serve God, if you wanted to be an upstanding Christian, that you were going to sell all you had, get your lands to God, because of course that's not even because the church required it. The church didn't require it. It just was assumed that if you loved Jesus, that was what you were going to do. And they did it.
So that you're not even talking about retirement though, because like you, there is no breaking point on that spectrum when you're talking about an individual's relationship with material. It's just it's anti-materialism in general. Like so that can apply
to the
money that you have that you're living on that you're not even that you don't even have enough to put into retirement.
I'm using those guys as the extreme. Like this is the example.
We talk about like. Orphan guy in the UK.
George Mueller.
Like here's a guy that any or Taylor, you know, like any money that comes in immediately gets put in and you're okay living in poverty because that money's just going straight into ministry and it never even touches your stomach for that matter.
Here's the thing. I remember when I read Hudson Taylor's journal, I thought to myself, like, man, does this guy enjoy, you know, like I kind of got a little stressed out, like, oh, so he's just, you know, we're never going to add up. We're never going to be Hudson Taylor. He gives everything he owns to the poor. He's just you know, he sounded like that, what you just said there, like, oh, they're just going to live in poverty. But then as I was reading his journal, I realized, like, Hudson Taylor had, like, tea time 2 or 3 times a day where he met with people and they all drank tea and hung out. He was always had food. His family always had clothes. That's the crazy part is even though they lived this very loose lifestyle with their money, George Mueller, too. He's the pinnacle, right? He's the guy. But they weren't poor necessarily. Like they weren't living hand to mouth in rags,
exactly.
With shoes with hole in them.
Right. So how does that scale, you know, bigger? Like, what does that mean for someone that is wealthy? It makes it impossible to critique, I feel like. Because you just don't understand anyone's dynamics or their situations.
Yeah, and I don't think that you should be. My goal is not like, hey, turn and send this episode to your rich friend so you can tell them how bad they are with money. I completely agree with you. You don't know. You have no clue. Like, I know people who live on donations. I also can understand that lifestyle a bit because we also can't do the things we do without the help of other people. And you would be surprised who supports you and who does not. If you walk into, if you're talking with people and you go to a church and you share about the ministry you have, your expectation will a lot of times be, you know, if you're doing this from a purely materialistic perspective, when I first had to do some of this myself, my brain might have thought, I might have very selfishly thought, oh, there's a rich person, they have money to spare, oh, that person's poor. And then I very quickly, very, very quickly was like, God, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to look at people for money. I'm not going to ask people. I'm not going to expect it. I'm just going to tell people about what we do. I'm just going to have fun. I let you worry about the finances, God. But I will say this, the people who send Revive Thoughts and who help my wife and I out the most are not necessarily always, sometimes they are, the rich people who do have, they have money and they want to bless others. But a lot of times they're not. They're the people you wouldn't expect at the church necessarily to be able to help you out. They're people that maybe you would have even looked down on, like, oh, that's, you know, you would be really surprised which people are giving and which people aren't. So I definitely am extremely against any kind of like judgment on other people and their money. I think that you would be very surprised which people are actually giving the most to the missionaries and which people are actually taking care of the people around them the most, because it's not, and Jesus is right. The widow with the two mites, it is definitely a real thing that I have seen. But with that said, I do think we can judge our hearts. Like we ourselves, our attitudes towards money, I'm not trying to create a new system for you to do, follow this system and you'll retire correctly and have the right attitudes towards money. But I do think we should have a heart check when we are constantly talking about building up that generational legacy wealth, which is good. Come on. Yeah, I'm not saying also don't give some money to your children and your grandchildren. And if you have some land and pass it on, that's wonderful. Great. Of course, if you can do that, there's nothing wrong with that. I am saying, though, is our attitudes towards money, is our reflections towards money, is our hearts towards money in alignment with Scripture, in alignment with all of the examples we see in church history? If we hear these examples and these people's stories and how the pastor who never retired or the guys who gave all they owned, and we hear that and we go, well, that's just ridiculous. That's for another era. That's not us. I just want to stop us and go, why isn't it? What's keeping it from being for us? Why was it good for all the Christians until about 100 years ago? What changed for us? And if it is purely just, well, we're used to certain levels of comfort, that's idolatry. That's a sin on us. We've made a mistake along the way. Now, these guys also were famous in church history for working themselves to death. So I'm not saying die at 52 because you wouldn't put down the pen and stop writing books and preaching. I'm not saying that I expect everyone who goes into the pastorate to be poor and have to beg. I'm also saying that I think in an overreaction to that attitude of, I don't want all of our ministries to be poor. I want pastors to be able to feed their families and have a good time. I don't want us to be under this shroud of guilt with money or anti that. I think we've swung maybe too far in the opposite direction now, where we're expecting that we should not have to care about these things anymore and not ask the question of how do we spend our money at all. Does that make sense, Joel?
It makes sense. I find it difficult to practically represent. Like, in your head, is there a way in which you are applying these thoughts? You know, like, what does that look like in practical terms?
So I think
it makes me feel a certain way.
No, I don't think we should just be fully based on our feelings with the money. I do think we should. I think what I said earlier when I mentioned, hey, am I investing in my retirement account in heaven? That's kind of what I'm thinking it mm-hmm. should be as well. If you're looking for the pen and paper percentage, whatever a lot of us have like daily budgets and stuff, and some of us are going to put some of that budget towards a retirement, right?
With that logic, though, then no one would ever invest anything in retirement, right? If our primary thought should be our retirement in heaven, then what's the point of...
Look, and I will say, I'm not going to condemn if you're someone who comes up to me and says, I think the Lord was calling me to put all my retirement into heaven, so I just did, and I didn't worry about the future.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Some people will look at you and say, oh, you're being stupid, you're going to pay for that later, blah, blah, blah. I would probably look at you and go, hey, you know what? Cool, let's see. Maybe in 40 years, I'm going to look at you and go, I guess that was stupid. But I'm not actually going to be, but right now, I'm too young maybe to care, but I'll go, hey, yeah, you know what? Cool, nice work. That's awesome. I hope that works out for you. The Lord's calling you to do that. I'm not going to stop you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't think that means we have an excuse to be reckless with money, though. It's easy for a person, a young person in their 20s to spend all their money and say, I gave some money to the poor. You don't have any responsibilities yet. So, okay, that's easy to do, right? As you get older, responsibilities, you have to put all this financial burden on your children, your grandchildren, et cetera. So I do understand why putting that preparation ahead of time makes things better for everybody. And I don't think it's bad if you want to pass something on to your children and grandchildren.
Even yourself. I mean, we're talking about legacy with children and grandchildren or such, but even I feel like just to allow yourself to function in a more stable way, you know, not sure. having to worry about medical bills, not having to worry about lodging and food and things like that.
Yeah. As scripture says too, if you can't feed your family, you know, you're right, like you are letting them down. It actually says if he doesn't work, he doesn't eat, but a man doesn't feed his family is better, I think it's no better than an unbeliever or something like that. So money in scripture is a difficult subject because the Lord really does kind of put two conflicting ideas out there, doesn't he? Take care of your family, feed and work hard. Make sure, how many Proverbs say store up, your wealth and oil and all this stuff so that you have it to give the future? And then on the other side, Jesus turns around and says, sell all you own and have it, give it to the poor. Mm-hmm. My people will be going out with only the money belt, but it'll all be coming from God. These two things seem to conflict. And I think that's kind of the point. I think it puts us in this uncomfortable tension where we're not fully secure unless we're being led by him. and he has to be the one who's over our finances. There's no perfect formula that I, as a human, can kind of fall into this exact spot where I'm comfortable, I'm doing it by myself, I found the formula, I'm good. I think there's going to be a consistent tension to kind of push you. Either it's going to prick you from God, hey, are you doing enough to leave for your children so that you're going to be okay? Or like you said, for you, so you're stable. Are you taking care of your needs at home? And then reverse that, you're very comfortable. You're taking care of your needs at home. You've definitely put time towards retirement, but have you done enough to actually put money into the things that matters? I think that it's meant to be a little bit uncomfortable without a perfect answer so that it forces us to rely on him.
Omaha Steaks semi-annual sale is here. It's a sale so nice, they do it twice a year. Save 50% site-wide on the world's best proteins, like legendary steaks, gourmet burgers, versatile chicken, pork, seafood, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code AUDIO when you shop OmahaSteaks.com today. Now is the time to save big on everything you need to serve up mouth-watering flavor, like USDA-certified tender steaks, perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand-cut by master butchers in America's heartland and delivered right to your door. With unrivaled quality and variety, every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Shop now at OmahaSteaks.com and save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the semi-annual sale. Plus, get an extra $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's OmahaSteaks.com, promo code AUDIO. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I feel like I'm imagining one of those, like, if this, then that, like, charts. We need to make one of those, a Revive Thoughts branded, flow thought pattern. Like, what do they call those things? Flow chart. At least that's how my brain works. I want practical application here. I want when I'm looking at my bank account, should my thought process be about where to distribute money or not? I like that idea of that tension that causes us to rely on God. Makes sense.
Well, and I kind of appreciate you pushing me on that, because I couldn't figure out how to say it till you said it just like that. And I was like, I think this is what I'm trying to say. There was something else about that too. There was some students have been asked, we were talking about the Holy Spirit and gifts, and it was kind of like the same answer. It was like, how do you know what your spirit, these gifts you have from God are? And I'm like, it was a long, and the answer kind of came at the end where it was like, I think it's this, where like, you don't get the full answer. You have to rely on God to help you to know exactly when it's this and that. And I just think sometimes we need to be, I think it's difficult for all of us, but I think we need to be comfortable with the fact that the reason it's tension, the reason there's not like a clean cut, perfect answer, fill in the answer and the test thing, is because it's meant to make you not rely on yourself, but on God. And if you had that perfect answer, you would just go, got it, perfect answer, I'm good, right? Like, look throughout scripture, there are so many of these. How do you perfectly explain the Trinity? How do you perfectly explain that a human is both soul and also material body? Like, we are full of these tensions that force us to go, man, I can't explain it without God. Like, I need his help. And I think that this, I think money is one of those things too, where like we're not getting conflicting advice. God obviously has a way in our life where we can both do these things maximally well. But I think without his help, we will fall into the error of building up a bunch of money for ourselves or not having the money we need. And we need him to guide those thoughts. And that's why I kind of felt like we needed to talk about this from the perspective of today. Because I think we're starting to, I think, again, at one point, and just because there's an uncomfortable tension, as a church, we kind of lean on one side or the other and can go one way or the other. There have been times when the church throughout history was way too decadent, had way too much money, wasn't giving it to the poor, was hoarding it. And there have been other times where, like we mentioned before, everyone was giving away everything they owned, and maybe they went too far in that direction. I will say, and this is just me, and Joel, you can chastise, if I'm going to err on one of these two sides, I think it's safer, eternally speaking, to err on the side of giving what I own to the poor and being too generous with my money than it is to err on the side of being too hoardy with my money, right? Like, and maybe that is wrong. But when I look at scripture and I go, like, if I have to toss a coin and I have to go, like, well, I want to make one of these two mistakes, which one would I rather get to heaven and have to apologize for? And I feel like I'd rather get to heaven and say, God, be like, you gave away too much money. You cared too much I had some really cool earthly blessings I was going to give you, but you gave too much away. I am sorry, God. I shouldn't have given so much away. That I do think is the safer place to err on than to get to heaven and God go, man, I wanted you to give this money away and help these people, but you didn't. You know, that I do. Now, that doesn't mean, okay, so you're saying give all away all you, so your house has no chairs in it because you sold everything to the poor. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I think our standard should be, I should err on the side of being more generous than err on the side of being too stingy. I do think that is the direction we should, as a Christian, our hearts should probably be bent towards.
Curious to know our listeners' thoughts on this. Maybe this has sparked a thought or a comment that our listener wants to make regarding retirement and money on this episode of Revive Conversations. You can write in at revivethoughts@gmail.com. Revivethoughts@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts. Maybe we can analyze it. We can read it on air. We can have a part two where we do listener feedback. But
oh man, I actually would love that if you guys give us all your thoughts, and then you can correct me and explain to me what I got wrong and where I'm at, and you know, we can get a good Dave Ramsey lesson or something like that in here. So I have no problem with that. And I think a good argument, you know, you could make is one you made earlier. Like, hey, if I'm putting all my investments into investments so that I can leave and give more money to people, I think that can be a really good argument. Sometimes the best way to help people is to have money to start with. And, you know, you need that. Basil, one of our earliest sermons, the first sermon we ever did by Basil is called Basil to the Rich, where he does chastise his congregation very harshly because he said, none of you are giving to the poor. You're all waiting till you die to give it away as an inheritance. So he said, I'm not considering any of you generous. I'm considering death himself generous because he's the one responsible for giving away all the money in this church, not you. And I think that's a really strong critique. So it's something to throw out there. It's an interesting perspective. Is it you who's giving away the money, or is it actually just death causing all the money
to be given away?
But still,
there's something about spiritual development in that walk where you do, like, it is impactful for you to experience that stuff. It is impactful for you to experience relying on the Lord for finances, and that tension, like you mentioned. So I do think, yeah, as far as that human journey that we go on through life, to your point, I think Basil was onto something there, that it's good for us to go through and experience that rather than, well, I don't know. It also makes sense to, I mean, if the final payoff impact is going to be more, you know, fiscally, quantitatively impactful, if your compounding interest has its time to do its thing and you don't experience that, what is that trade-off? Because so then I go back to, you're talking about this when it comes to your own personal investment in heaven. You know, you want to be that tool and be that experience for God to use while you're going through life. I don't know. I feel like it could go either way. Ideally, you have the luxury of being able to do both, give away vast amounts of money and experience that, and also be able to compound some interest. Although I don't know, I feel like you'd push back on that too. Listener.
I mean, ideal, you know, look, I am open to the Lord, you know, making me a millionaire and challenging me with giving more of that away. I say that, maybe I actually wouldn't want that. Maybe, Lord, I shouldn't actually jokingly say that, but I'm just saying, like, you know, I've never had to experience that particular burden for sure. So I don't know. I will say too, it does depend on who you are. I do think that there are businessmen who the way they can most honor God is by doing these businesses super well, and as they do them well, they honor God in that industry. And I think that might be different than the doctor who makes money, who might be different than the shopkeeper who makes money, who might be different than the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I also think it's, we can't put one perfect retirement strategy over everybody, because I could see it, they could see that God has maybe a different plan of using money for the teacher than he does for the person whose patent made them 10 million. I can for certainly say that it'll be different stories for each of us, but just that overarching question of what is guiding me? Am I treating that money the right way? Am I in step with all the other Christians throughout history who have lived, who have been, you know, for the most part, yeah, they have money for today and they do put some money in savings, but it's not this entire life-arching goal to get to retirement. like I think it so often can be for us today, where it just, it's almost consuming us, where we're working towards that thing 20 years into the future. I don't think if I went back in time and talked to the Christians throughout most periods of history, I might be wrong. I don't think they'd be sitting there saying like, yeah, but I got 15 more years till I can be done doing this and sitting around all day. And that's when the good life begins. I think a lot of them would look at that and go like, that's a really foreign concept. I'm fishing today. I expect to be fishing tomorrow. At some point, the big storm will kill us. But for now, we're out here fishing, right? Like, I just think that is a unique to our time period way of viewing money in the world. And I think it can be just a trap to us if we're not careful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good thinking. I'm curious. Hopefully, you know, one of our listeners, this is exactly what they needed to hear. Again, write into us, revivethoughts@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Again, feel free to call Troy out or feel free to support him.
There was one of our most controversial episodes when I were thinking back on it was us talking about money and me being like, hey, don't put so much money on conference tickets. So I might have been stepping on it to put this one out here, but I wanted to go for it anyway. If I'm wrong, I do apologize. I hope I'm not leading you astray, but it's just my thoughts. All right. As Bill said, go ahead and write in. Let us know. And if you have any other future ideas, you got a super cool revived conversation you want to hear us tackle next, let us know. We'd be happy to do it. We always enjoy your ideas and the ones that you send to us. So this is Troy and Joel, and this is Revive Thoughts.